Hey, yo, and here we go. It's We Talk Comics. It's on the air for our 50th episode. Episode number 50 will be known as No Brett, No Problem, Willie. That's not my best Alf impression, by the way. Still got Chris with me. How you doing, Chris?
I'm awesome. My beer's empty, though.
Then how can you possibly be awesome?
I got another beer.
I love a man who's prepared. We also got Keith here, of course.
I am here. I have zero beers.
No, but you got blueberries, right?
But I have blueberries.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. I got nothing but my own good looks, and that's not getting me very damn far. But anyways, Brad, of course, not here this week, so it's going to be a great show. And we're going to move on now to my favorite part of the show. I think most people's one of their two favorite parts is one of the two things they can always count on, and that's the weekly news with Cup Reporter Kate, of course, sponsored by the best comic book site on the entire planet, Comicosity. And now the news.
Well, quiet news week. Just a couple of big stories to talk about. Let's start with a follow-up to last week. The Marvel Now title that was teased with the name with the word Lightning has been confirmed that it is Thunderbolts. That is by Daniel Way and Steve Dillon. The team... which is, I actually really want to get Chris's feedback on this because I know he's been a big Thunderbolts fan.
It's a suck fest.
We've got Red Hulk, Venom.
Has been Electra. Is the key part, right? Oh, sorry, go ahead. Go ahead again.
Red Hulk, Venom, Elektra, Deadpool, and the Punisher.
Wait, I thought Elektra was dead.
Elektra, currently alive.
an alien pretending to be her, or?
Who can keep track?
All right. Give me those once again. We got Red Hulk, Deadpool, Venom, Elektra.
Red Hulk, Venom, Elektra, Deadpool, and the Punisher.
And the who?
The last time Punisher was on a team, it was the Secret Defenders. How well did that freaking work?
Oh, it was glory days right there.
I kind of miss the idea that it was villains. I know, it's a long time ago.
These are kind of like the anti-heroes.
Yeah, it's a group of the anti-heroes. What's the difference between this and Heroes for Hire, Villains for Hire? Is there any of this that really matters? Isn't this like Silver Sable's team, but just slightly higher quality characters? Is anti-heroes?
Well, we've got Elektra and Punisher, who both have unsuccessful movies. We have Deadpool, who could never get his movie off the ground. And we have Venom, that was handled terribly in a movie.
Oh, yeah, like you're right. Deadpool's one appearance was handled beautifully.
His 9 minutes was awesome. I have a fan edit of Wolverine Origins that is 9 minutes long, and I have scrawled on it Deadpool Origins.
There you go.
There is a 9 minute movie in Wolverine Origins that's worth watching.
Yeah.
So that's the team.
So Chris, you're the guy. Your team. You're the one who'll be reading. Go ahead.
Yeah, no. Actually, I have no interest in any of these characters. This is the new Fantastic Four all over again. When we got the Hulk, Wolverine, Ghost Rider, and Spider-Man on a freaking team. There's no bonding agent there. These are a bunch of loners thrown together, and it's destroying a title I truly like. A team that has been together for 150 issues, and they're just throwing it away.
Yeah, certainly feel like, I mean, why would they be called the Thunderbolts? I don't get that. It does seem like you want to put those guys in a team. Call them Suicide Squad. Just get it over and done with.
Amazingly, yeah. It actually makes more sense to call this team Thunderbolts than anyone else.
That's probably true.
Because the Red Hulk is Thunderbolt Ross.
Good point.
They probably deserve the name more than anyone.
I don't know. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's right there is my application for Marvel's marketing department.
There you go. You know what? You'd be brilliant. I got to say this. It's just that the team doesn't seem – Chris really nailed it. Is that the team doesn't seem like it has the right chemistry. It doesn't seem like it should happen. That said – I will reserve full judgment until I read it because it may be a good book. I think that Way is a good writer, so it may be a good book.
I like Way. Dylan's one of my favorites. Yeah, we'll be checking it out for the show for sure.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, Chris, you got to read issue one.
Yeah, no, I will. I will. I would anyway, just because it's the Thunderbolts, and I've been around this long, but I mean, come on.
I think the last
Why can't I just have my freak little characters, man? We have Troll Girl on my current team. I love Troll Girl.
But that's the thing is that if you take who are the established fans of a book and immediately make the core fan base not excited about the change, you probably failed with the change. But I guess, again, I think they're thinking, obviously, these characters can come together and draw a larger audience. So
I need one character. That's all from the whole team. One character. Nobody.
Nobody. Hey, well, you know what? Maybe it'll still happen. You never know. You never know.
Hey, although Peter David did it with X Factor, and I love his run. So
there you go. So Keith, what else you got here?
All right. Well, Jim Lee is leaving Justice League.
Yeah.
Jim Lee going off to an as yet unannounced project, which probably is Trinity War.
Oh. I was hoping I would be joining Rob Liefeld on the unemployment line.
So, Jim Lee's been quite successful, actually, in what he's been doing.
Well, not if you're looking from a quality art perspective. If you're looking from a high sales and the fact that he still has a high reputation. But if you're looking at the true quality of work, it's not there. It's not what Jim Lee's capable of. Actually, tell you the truth, this might be good. That sounds like what is this? The Trinity War is a miniseries?
We don't know yet how Trinity War is going to play out. That's what was teased in the free comic day, that it'll be a Justice League event.
Okay, see, if it's a Justice League, if it's like a miniseries where he has months to work on it, when he does that, generally, it's awesome. You know, of course, he had months to work on Batman, All-Star Batman and Robin, and, you know, awful.
And we know who the new team will be, starting with issue 15. Ivan Rice and Joe Prado, who have been working on Aquaman, will take over the art.
Okay, very. Oh, I love Rice.
Yeah, it's a good team. I've really been enjoying what they're doing in Aquaman. Yeah. So I'll be interested to see what it.
That's a true upgrade in art. So
I may jump back in now. No, it's I haven't been following Justice League because I don't find there's enough happens in an issue. I'm interested in Trinity War, so we'll see where that goes.
All right. Well, you know what? I think I've read every single thing that's ever come out of DC named Trinity and enjoyed it. So we'll see. Again, I'll reserve judgment until I shit all over it down the road.
Which you will.
Possibly. It's who I am. I'm Bitterman. I love being a Bitterman.
All right. A little news bit just for me. Baltimore Comic Con happened. They at the DC panel, there was a question of, hey, where's Booster Gold? And I'm assuming Dan DiDio is terrified of my Chalkboards for Booster campaign. And they have said that Booster will be appearing in the JLA title. Not said whether that's regular or as a member of a team or how that's going to play.
The only reason you get away with this news piece, since it is just for you, is that you are also one of our regular listeners.
I am. I am a big fan.
All right.
Anything else? I've been in for a long time. And the last one is a piece I want to get a reaction from. Now, this is a spoiler alert. Spoiler alert. Ooga, ooga, spoiler alert. It is the AVX number 11. They've been teasing for a while. There was going to be a death in this. I am reading AVX. Mo and Chris are not reading AVX. Brett,
so
now here's
skip,
not reading
if you me. Don't want to know who it is, if you haven't read it yet, skip ahead 5 minutes and then come back after you've read it to get our reactions.
I gave up on issue 3.
I gave up on issue 1.
And if I get into one of my blogs about AVX, come back in 17 minutes.
All right, let's...
No, I tease me. So, big finale. AVX number 11, Professor X dies. Action.
I actually thought he was dead already.
Well, my reaction to Professor X dying is I'm going to miss him for the next 30 issues till he comes back. Like, honest to God, it's hard to have a reaction to a guy like Professor X dying because, you know, I've just seen his level guys go and come back so many times. that it doesn't feel important. It would feel more to me if they had a hot character who was coming up, who dies. Like, Hope is a hot character coming up, and she dies. I feel like that's a bigger thing than a guy like Professor X, who's like, they really won't keep Professor X dead. And they brought back Bucky. You know? They're bringing back Professor X. So, and again, I think just the entire direction Marvel is going, I don't believe that anything happening now is permanent. Everything feels like it's a state of flux anyway, so.
Actually, Keith, this sort of leads into a topic we can expand on a little bit. Do you think Professor X has been a relevant character since they played with turning him into an evil character with Onslaught?
I think that's a good point, Chris.
I was thinking about this this week because Professor X plays a large part of my favorite X comic book right now, Extreme X-Men. And it just dawned on me that, I mean, every issue they kill a couple Professor X's, and this is where I want Professor X. It's a character I love, but for me, he died in Onslaught, which is why I thought he was currently dead, because I just don't give a damn about him anymore.
No, that's right. This is not his first death, right? You know, and that's the other thing. Chris said he loves Professor X. I feel a lot of people think Professor X is important. I'm not sure how many people love him. But yeah, no, good point, Chris. What do you think, Keith?
Yeah, they really chickened out on Onslaught. And I don't think Professor X really works without the school. And I don't see what his role is. I've been more interested in the past year in Wolverine running the school. I haven't been able to figure out for, you know, a year why the character, why Professor X is still around, because there's no function that he has. And I read this issue, and actually he does stuff for a change and is imposing and scary, and it was quite good. And then I'm like, really, that was where you were going with this? You almost kind of have redeemed the character after like years of wasting him, and that was your plan. That was how it was played out. So I've got a mini topic actually let's close out the news and then go to a mini topic that I think is germane to this conversation.
Okay, but I want to talk a little more about Professor X.
You want to go?
I just want to say, and I just want to get everybody's reaction or idea on this. His characterization to me over the years from different writers seems extremely inconsistent, and I think that's one of the reasons why I don't gravitate towards him in the same way. Does anybody else think that?
I think I used to relate to him a whole lot more than I do now. This week I watched the X-Men anime, and it's a take on Professor X's son, who in the comic books was named Legion. In this, he was named something else. But I found myself going, oh yeah, this is why I used to love this guy. And he hasn't been relevant in 20 years. So
how about you, Keith? Do you think he's been inconsistently portrayed over the years?
Yeah, and I don't think anyone really knows what to do with the character. I mean, he's a ridiculous, powerful telepath. But there's not a lot of writers that can make that go somewhere. He's uber powerful. He really has to play off people. So either as the headmaster of the school, as an opposite to Magneto, that's why the films work. He needs a foil, because he's just not that interesting a character to me on his own. He's done too much. He's seen too much. Without, you know, ever wavering from, you know, the kind of a bit boring core of the character.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. And I just want to mention, just to throw this in there, you meant to say that's why the first two films work. Anyways, let's end the news.
And that's the news.
All right.
So
Jermaine mini topic.
That's right. Now, I've been stacking up X-Men comics. My big reading project over the summer was supposed to be rereading a bunch of X-Men stuff. Picked up a bunch of trades, borrowed stuff, and et cetera, et cetera. And I got through maybe 50 comics out of my, like, you know, hundreds that I had intended. And it just was so slow going, and I couldn't seem to get back into it. Like, all these books that I really loved. And then I had a moment where I read an issue of Uncanny X-Men at the very tail end of Chris Claremont's run. And I read one of the new AVX tie-ins from, I think it was Wolverine and the X-Men a couple weeks ago. I read those like one after the other and hated them both so much that I just thought, I think I just am not interested in the X-Men anymore. Have you ever had a book where you just screech to a halt and you're like, I'm out. I was enjoying this. And then all of a sudden it has gone so sideways. I'm not mad about it. I'm just have zero interest in continuing.
Well, Keith, in some ways, the closest for me that I could think of is exactly what happened with the New 52, right?
Well, it's more, I mean, that's an anger thing though. I mean, it's not an anger thing.
Like I say, my issue, I mean, I was angry, but my anger was because I think the quality went bad. And my anger was with what they did with some of the characters. Ah, you're right. It was anger. But it wasn't anger over the idea that they were doing it. I mean, that's the big thing you have to keep in mind. I wasn't angry over the idea of them rebooting. I wasn't angry over the idea of new number ones. Go back to episode number two.
I did go back to episode number two. What you actually said is, I'm angry.
No.
Yes, you said, I'm angry. I think this is a bad move, but I think we'll get good stories where you're exactly.
Actually, I probably did say that. But I also think because of that, I said, I will give it a try. I didn't go in. No, I thought I would. I don't think I said I was angry. I said, I think it's a bad move. I don't think I ever said the words, I'm angry. I said, I think it's a mistake.
See, right here, I need Brett to pull an audio clip.
Yeah, and maybe he'll be too lazy to do that. I'm sure he will be.
But that's the thing. I mean, I really want to be angry at DC. But at the end of the day, I'm sitting there. I'm conflicted because I don't like these moves. But God damn it, if it's not going to be good to read. It's not going to be fun.
But the point being, though, that, yeah, I mean, I didn't go into all the number ones when I read them angry, though. I really didn't. I just read them. I wasn't expecting it to suck. It was when I opened it up, and the very first thing I read was JLA number one, which blew donkey balls. Well, that put a bad bad taste in my mouth, yeah. But keep in mind, it's not like I sat there and was ready to hate this from the beginning. I was ready to like it. I just think it wasn't well done. I just think the books were bad and the continuity issues were bad. And the recharacterizations were often missing the point of what made the characters cool in the first place. I think pissing on the legacy was a mistake. But I did not, because if they had kept all that stuff, if they had had good stories, good characterization, kept the legacy but made a new start, that would have been fine. It's the way they did it that made me mad, right? So, I mean, for me, that is probably the closest where I was like, really love DC, love DC, love DC. They took a sideways. I just felt the quality was not good. I'm like, okay, I don't like the quality. So I'm done. I mean, I can't think of anything else. I mean, Amazing Spider-Man I stepped away from after years of reading, but that was a slow erosion. It was, it's getting worse, it's getting worse, it's getting worse, it's getting worse. Please turn around, and it didn't. And I'm like, I'm done. And I just stepped away. I came back for Straczynski, thought that sucked even worse, stepped away again.
How about you, Chris?
Well, I mean, you're catching me at a bad point here, because I just tried to reread the entirety of Alpha Flight.
I've tried to reread that too.
And it's a comic I have fond memories of. And the first 28 issues by Byrne are wonderful. But around 34, I was damn mad. And I'm to the point now that I don't think I'll ever be able to go back and enjoy Vindicator / Guardian ever again, which is sad, because the only comic book I'll ever be able to read with my favorite Alpha Flight member, Puck, will have these characters in them. And I'm not going to be able to go back just because of one stupid, stupid story arc involving Purple Girl.
See, now, and one of my favorite Alpha Flight characters comes out of that run, but I can't go back and read them either. And I think it's one of the books that I read like too much when I was a kid that I still remember the stories too clearly. There's no surprise for it for me. And they're not going to be better now after all these years. So it's better to actually remember the stories and having enjoyed them rather than go back. It's the, what do we call that again? The Knight Rider rule? it's that. Like, because I love Madison Jeffries, who, you know, he's currently in the X-Men. He's one of the big brains in the X-Men books now. And I loved him in those books. But, yeah, I can't go back and read those either.
I got a question.
Refresh my memory.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead, Chris.
Refresh my memory. He was the second box, correct?
That's right. He had the power to transmute metal and make machines. So he had actually created Box to begin with. Roger Box was inside it, and then he had to take the suit over when Roger Box went insane.
Right, right. Okay.
Like I said, all of them still in my head. Don't need to reread the book.
Well, I mean, this comes back to something else, though. I mean, that to me, I find it really difficult to go back and read generally books from the 80s. We were on this show early on talking about how much we loved Nth Man. And then Keith went down and tracked down some copies for us and spread them around. And I was just looking forward to it because I loved it. And I get into it. And it's just the presentation of 80s comic books is so different than what I'm used to today. And just generally, I have a difficulty going back to that era. I don't find they flow as well. I don't find there's some things that they're better at for sure. But some ways I just some things to me just feel too old and too retro and too, you know, I don't know. Unless it's exemplary work like Daredevil was from Frank Miller, I generally have difficulty going back to 80s books.
I actually take exception to that. I work with a lot of younger people in the television industry. And, you know, I'll suggest a show or something like that. Again, from the 80s, because that was when I grew up, like Magnum P.I. or Stingray or something like that. And, of course, nobody will watch them. And they all say, it's too slow. It's too cliched. And I don't think that's true because, I mean, today's shows are just as cliched and slow. It's just a different style that you have to adjust to. If you are accustomed to the language, if you actually get over that hump, I mean, it's sometimes when you switch channels back to a different style of comic books or television or movies for that matter, a lot of people won't watch black and white. But after a certain amount of period, once you acclimatize yourself to that same writing style or format, you then become able to recognize what's good and what's bad. But there is a bridging period there, I find, whenever you switch from one era to the next.
But you know what, Chris? I mean, we're talking about me here. You know I watch black and white movies. You know I watch television shows from the 80s. You know I...
Yes, but you don't watch new stuff.
No, that's not true. I'll watch a new movie. It's just... But that's recently, right? That's within the last 3 years. So, I mean, if you would consider something from 2008 new, which I would... We're talking about the X-Men movies. I've seen those, right?
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, it's not like... But the point is if there was movies I was interested in seeing, I would watch them, Chris. It's just nothing I'm interested in. But so that's different. But, like, you know, I'll go back and watch those shows. And like I say, I can read a book from the 80s if it's exemplary. But it's not like you could sit there and say, oh, you just got to get over the hump. Because the truth is, I'll read an entire run of it. Like Keith is talking about reading all of those X-Men. I read all of Ant-Man. It just wasn't as good as I remembered. And it was because of the style. But it didn't mean I didn't finish it. So... It's, you know, I mean, if I'm not liking it by issue 4 still, it's probably it. I really do think it's the style. I just don't think it holds up well. That 80s style of the way the overuse of thought balloons and word balloons and just the pacing and just the I don't know, spoon feeding the reader too much information, I think is my issue.
They were exposition heavy. I mean, I find that when I read the Essentials and the Showcase editions, which I really enjoy because you get so much content for so cheap. But particularly Marvel books, because they had that editorial policy of every comic is someone's first comic, and you have to have a plot summary catch you up to date at the beginning of every issue. You know, reading John Byrne Visionary collections, and every issue has a full page that is dedicated to telling you everything that happened up to this moment. And there's only so many ways you can do that before it's two people in a room who just had this long event and then stop and like, hey, remember 2 hours ago we get trapped in this room and blah, 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 of everything that's happened since they got in the room. And it just makes no sense. And that's, you know, I learned the pace as I was reading this Fantastic Fours that I could just, okay, that's the page that happened. Go right to the next page.
Well, we talk a little bit, you know, I mean, Peter David in the Hour with Peter David episode we had talked a little bit about how Claremont would spoon feed the fans everything, and he didn't want to do that. He didn't, you know, not the thought balloons and all that stuff. I mean, Chris, the thing is that when I'm reading these books, like, I loved Squadron Supreme when I first read that, and I still think it's a very important piece of work, but I can't go back and read it now because honestly, nobody talks like that. Nobody's dialogue is ever like that. And that really hurts it. Say what you will about the 80s. At least people still talk like that. You know? Or a movie from the 40s. The slang might be different. But people still actually, generally, if it's a good movie, talk like that. They talk like people. They don't talk like real people in those books that I'm talking about. Like Nth Man. There was nobody talked like how a real person talks. And that to me is the biggest, in many ways, writing-wise, that's the biggest leap forward that we've experienced. And the best thing about today's genre is how that the writing and the dialogue has evolved into what people actually talk like and speak like in a more natural feel.
It's funny. I had the opportunity a couple of years ago to meet William Link, who co-created Columbo. And he was asked in an interview that he was doing for us, if he liked the modern murder mystery stories, the CSI kind of things. And he said, I really can't watch them. I wrote all those plots 40 years ago and they're just reusing them over and over.
Yeah.
It's, you know, there's a bit of change to the storytelling. I mean, the plots are the same as they, you know, plot styles are the same as they always were.
Oh, absolutely.
But yeah, exposition that actually has changed for me. It's like, just the it's not about accessibility. I mean, Marvel has those great summaries that I never read even on a new book of what has come before.
And don't bother reading Amazing Spider-Man 12 or whatever it was here.
All right, well, we have another little mini topic, a little...
Oh, yeah, I got a million of them, but Chris, I think, still wants to weigh in here.
I'm having a hard time with this because what you're saying is the Farrah Fawcett, Charlie's Angels will never become a primetime hit again. And that's just something I cannot accept.
I don't know why you would think it would.
No, it wouldn't. It doesn't
because
mean
I live
it's...
in my own little
and it's the same
world,
thing. You know,
man.
I'm not saying these aren't good books, Chris. I'm saying because they're great for the time, and it's okay to sometimes to be great for the time. You can be like that for a movie or a song or a book or whatever, but sometimes you just going back is difficult. And I think that's more my thing.
I usually find that once I read one Essentials volume, I get back into the flow of the word balloons and like that. And by the second Essential volume, I don't even notice it anymore. And I actually find it jarring to go back and read new comic books where there are no words. Hell, this week I read a Rob Liefeld and I actually felt insulted and thought, my God.
You read a Liefeld? You read a Liefeld. So you deserve to feel insulted. And B, you read a Liefeld. Of course you felt insulted.
I ended up wondering if this is for blind people who can't read. That is the demographic that I assign this book.
Yeah. Well, my thing is that, unfortunately, you're talking about Liefeld. I mean, I could go from reading anything and it'd be a jarring experience going from it to going to reading a Liefeld book.
I'm just using that as an example.
A poor example, though.
Don't have as much reads tend to take me less time to read.
They generally are quicker reads, yeah. But you know what? That's not necessarily a bad thing.
No, but I mean, there are quick reads from the 80s as well. They're just different.
They are different. They are.
And I have a hard time. I have a hard time saying, like, sure, do I love everything I used to love from the 80s? No. But there's a significant percentage that I still love and go back and read. Nymph Man, unfortunately, is not one of them.
By the way, I lied when I said I finished it. I quit after issue 8. That's enough.
That's more than I read a Primal Force.
There you go.
Without Brett, I think we can still do this topic that our buddy Matt suggested, the continuity question.
Yeah.
Brett's not a continuity guy. This is one that came up suggested after our, was our Twitter suggestion show, or was it? It got suggested at some point.
I think he just suggested it out of the blue.
Or out of the blue. So this is basically the question was, it comes out of some of the stuff that's going on right now in Green Lantern has a story that's going on. Justice League has a story that's going on. They're more or less taking place within a reasonable amount of time of each other, but I still haven't been able to figure out how they fit together. So this is Matt's question is, and he's looking back at the Grant Morrison Supermans or Grant Morrison's Justice League as an example of short term, it makes sense in Grant Morrison's JLA for Electric Superman to be in there because he's Electric Superman in four Superman books a month. Why wouldn't he be Electric Superman in Justice League? So short term, that makes sense. Now, 10 years on, almost 15 years on, you're reading Justice League at JLA on its own and suddenly Electric Superman's in there and then suddenly he's not. So Matt's question is, should each book just kind of handle itself and not worry about continuity cross title, or should they be, should Electric Superman be in all five books that Superman's going to be in that month?
Okay. Number one. Okay. So let's go back to Electric Superman a little bit here.
Now that's the specific example, but I mean, you could use the current Green Lantern and Justice League is a good example.
It's been on my mind for 15 years. So I'm reading Electric Superman as it's coming out, and I'm reading Justice League as it's coming out. And it struck me, and it probably does fit into what you said here, because we talk about how it's out of place. But here's the thing. I'm reading Superman, I'm reading the Justice League one, and all of a sudden Electric Superman shows up. And pretty much Morrison has him figure out all his powers and, like, introduce all his powers. Like, he's kind of slowly figuring them out in the books, his core books. And Morrison just kind of goes, oh, wait, I can do this, I can do this. And all of a sudden, he's super powerful again, more powerful than before. And from there on in, Morrison just continued to use him as a super powerful character with slightly different powers. But essentially, he had him doing the exact same stuff he was doing before. It was all of a sudden, he looked different, but he was still Superman. He's like, I got this out of the way, this is bullshit, and now I can use Superman the way I want to use him. So that's one thing you have to keep in mind if you're using that as an example. It seems like a good example, but it's not, because Morrison really treated him still like Morrison, or like Superman once he got that out of the way. Now, if you're going to do such a major change, especially a physical change like that, you have to include it. I don't think it's important. I do think you should be able to just have people read the books by themselves and enjoy them, and it shouldn't have to tie in together. But the truth is, if it doesn't tie in together, I know I'm exactly the type of guy who's going to bitch about it. So, not to be hypocritical, they have to put it in there. And not only that, if you have a book like JLA and you want to introduce some people who aren't checking out Superman to the character and hopefully increase sales, that's also how you do it. I mean, they really have to. There's no way around it, like it or not. Chris, what do you think?
Quality versus continuity. I would love to say for major publishers with these superheroes, quality is the key. And I love a good quality book. But I think my problem right now, and I've been dealing with this a lot, I've been wondering why I haven't been able to stay on any more than two of the New 52 books. Right now, I am reading with great regularity. I jump around all over the place and pick up new books every week just to see if I can get back on. But Dial H, and thanks to Keith's suggestion, I'm now caught up on Batman and Robin. And I think my problem is, if I had a more consistent universe, I wouldn't have this problem. I'd be wanting to find more stories that link together. If the New 52 was a little bit more cohesive, if I didn't have to finish a comic book and draw a graph on where it takes place in the timeline to see if everything makes sense. So I'm a Marvel zombie from way back, and their whole thing is always, I mean, there's huge holes, but their whole thing has always been to have one cohesive universe. DC has played a little bit more fast and loose over the years, in my opinion. And I think that's where a lot of people, make the distinction between the two companies. But I have a feeling that Mo's going to argue this point.
Well, I am, because you're right and you're wrong. Like, Spider-Man's universe was cohesive to its universe. X-Men's was cohesive to its universe. But it wasn't a cohesive Marvel universe. It was always pockets of, okay, this is this. And DC started to do that too. DC started to do that. Superman was its universe. Batman was its universe, which is not something they did certainly before Crisis, but after Crisis, they kind of took that Marvel, the way Marvel was doing it. Marvel never said they were doing it, whereas DC said, this is directly what we're doing, after that time. But Marvel, I'd say that's more what you have been seeing as a general rule is, and it's difficult because when you have all the characters come together, like in Avengers or even more so a JLA, where they're in all the different pockets of the universe, how do you pull that together? You could read Avengers and for a while there and not even know that X-Men existed in the Marvel universe.
Which is nice because I can't afford every book.
No, I totally agree with you. I just say what you're saying is not, I wouldn't say it's 100% accurate. It's not so much that I'm disagreeing with you or arguing with you. I'm just trying to clarify the way I see it.
Well, this is exactly what I was talking about last episode of the things I can't get into. And it's, Big Seven, Justice League is one of the things that I said. And the reason for that is that I've never been a fan of books, of team books, that have characters that also have solo books. And long term, it's exactly, the Electric Superman and JLA is the same problem I have with Grant Morrison's Animal Man needing to talk about Justice League Europe.
Yeah.
In hindsight, I just reread those books. I picked up those three trades over the summer, and they're great. But as I'm reading it, I know that they're referring offhand to him being in the Justice League Europe. There's like two issues that actually matters. And ultimately, there's a one fun issue where they're putting the teleporter in his house. But other than that, like it seems so secondary that he was in the Justice League Europe at all.
Well, and you know what? I think this goes back to, actually, Chris, go ahead. You look like you had something to say.
No, I'm just stifling a laugh thinking about the teleporter issue.
So that was a good issue.
I love that issue. But thinking about it cracks me up.
But I think this is something though. I mean, like I talk about this with Morrison, and I think we've seen this a few times. Whenever a creator is told, "Oh, you got to tie this in," and it's like you got to reference that he's in this team, or "Hey, you're in the middle of a storyline, we're gonna do a crossover." I almost always 97.5% of the time get the feeling that they resent having to do it. And I think that comes across. And I think that's part of the problem.
Well, and now Morrison has it in it to muscle when he gets pushed into those things. Back in the day, Animal Man was one of his first books. So there's the teleporter issue, and then the invasion crossover issue is another hilarious one.
Yeah.
But it's But
it's not just him, and it's not just in DC. I mean, as a general rule, I just get the feeling, like you say, anytime that the writers are having to do that, it always feels like, okay, let's get this out of the way, and they resent doing it.
So yeah,
my favorite example of that is the Darkest Night crossover with Hitman, where Tommy and the boys end up actually just sitting around drinking beers, looking at the sky turning dark, saying, "I bet those superheroes are having a tough time." That's the entire issue. It's great. I love it. It's funny.
Nice. Nice.
There's a little bit with vampires at the end, but that's like a page.
There's a topic that we can get into. I think I need to do some flipping through lists before I can do that one of the best crossover issues that don't really crossover very much.
Oh, yeah, that would be a good show. That would be a fun show to do. Absolutely be a fun show to do. We'll get to it in about 2-3 months. We have so many ideas built up already and different things, but all of it good shit. Speaking of which, I wanted to ask you guys one last. How about you do one more topic and then hit our world-famous Wii Views?
I got a quick thing as well, okay, yeah, so go ahead. Why don't you
do yours.
First.
Do yours.
Okay, this is really quick. I was reading Extreme X-Men. I'm enjoying it a great deal. I just like to explain to some of our American listeners that Governor General, although officially the head of her state, has no military power whatsoever.
No power whatsoever.
The comic book, he's referred to as Governor General of the Dominion of Canada, which would give him a whole lot more military power than
technically our name is. But Chris,
it absolutely might have in the 1850s.
But
exactly.
Technically,
that's
we are.
What we're talking about here.
Technically, we still are. Yes. Yeah.
Technically, really, we're the Dominion of Canada. We're not Canada. I mean, that's not our country's name. Technically, just like the people call America the States or America, but it's actually the United States of America. We are technically the Dominion of Canada.
If Wolverine is the Governor General of Canada or the Dominion of Canada as it exists today, he would be attending a whole lot of tea parties.
You know, I've actually been to a tea party with the Governor General of Canada.
Yeah.
He's a lovely guy, and he's not in charge of anything.
He's not in charge of anything, no.
I just like to make this clear. Now,
that's fantastic. Put that guy in charge of Alpha Flight.
Dominion of Canada actually means we never succeeded from the Commonwealth. Well, we haven't, but if we had never gained a ton of country, that position would have some military power, but as it's written, Greg Pak probably is a very smart guy and he's done his research and he plans to explore this in the future. But
have you sent him a message?
Wolverine
have you tweeted him?
No, I sent it this afternoon when it dawned on me. Wait a minute, Governor General, just because there's a word General in there, people are assuming there's some military power attached to this position.
No, essentially,
I'm gonna say Greg Pak, most recent writer on Alpha Flight, and from reading Alpha Flight, I don't know if he's even read the Wikipedia on Canada. I'll be totally honest. I enjoy his writing, but I'm not even sure he pulled up the wiki.
Okay, just to say, okay, so everybody does know, basically, there he just signs bills. Just to make it official on behalf of the Queen. That's the job.
Oh, and when we want to have an election, you have to go to the Governor General and say we want to have an election. They go, sounds good.
Yep, sounds good. That's it. Just on behalf of the Queen, just represent them. Since we're technically still...
That is their role.
That's the
technically, she has a, or he has a veto power. However, It's never been used in the history of Canada.
No, no. There was one point where the decision had to be made because his position was put in to never use it. But given the power, when all those years ago, he had to make the decision, do I use it or not? I can't remember who it was, but decided not to. Anyways, let's move on from that because it's going to shit out of most people.
We've now devolved into we talk Canadian politics.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Okay, let's get into something a little more fun here. I'm just wondering, guys, what are your comic book, your reading comic book, and you don't see it coming, awesome moments? Where you just turn a page or something happens and you went, oh, that's awesome. Do you guys have any that come to mind?
I have one. Standard number one.
Standard number one is a good one. Yeah, that was an awesome moment. I'll agree with you.
There was a laugh out loud moment in Batman and Robin number zero that I just say. I'm really enjoying it. That's one of my favorite New 52 books, and it was a laugh out loud. I really enjoyed it. It was shocking. It was oh my god, I can't believe that just happened kind of moment.
Yeah, you know what? I thought there'd be bigger events. Things that were like, I thought there'd be big things where you're like, yeah, I read this issue of Spider-Man, didn't see this coming. That was awesome. Like, it just that caught you off guard, awesome moment. I mean, I can't think of any for me, so I was hoping for something for you guys.
You didn't say my number one of all time. You said, are there some? And I said, yeah, there was one like an hour ago.
I said, what are some of your awesome? Right. I said, Keith, screw you. Give me some awesome moments. Give me some moments where you're like, that's awesome. That's why I love comics. You just didn't see it coming. You turn a page and you're like, you read something. You're like, that's awesome. Actually, Ultimate Avengers had some for me.
So I'm reading 52, and there's a moment. It's New Year's Eve, and it's the end of the Everman project, and Lex Luthor finally comes to fruition, and he shuts down all of their powers. And they all fall out of the sky. Hundreds of superpowered young people die in an instant. And it was, I can't even believe what I'm looking at. And knowing that he's just going to get away with it because he's Lex Luthor. There's one of my flip the page and I can't even believe what I'm looking at kind of moments.
That sounds more like a surprise than a this is awesome moment. But you know what was a great this is awesome moment for me? When Hal Jordan punched out Batman. That was awesome. I was like, I did not see that coming. He decks him. And I'm just like, that was awesome.
What was that?
Pardon me?
You mean Batman punches Guy Gardner?
No, I don't. I mean when Hal Jordan knocks out Batman.
What was that in?
That was when he returned here, his most recent time, after being the Spectre, when he was brought back to life. And there was the whole thing with the, I can't remember the name of it, the villain who had to cause him to be evil and everything like that. And he was back and he was a good guy again. And Batman's like, I just don't trust you. And they're just having this dialogue back and forth. And Jordan's just like, he's such a dick. He just hauled off and punched him. And it was hilarious. It was awesome. I loved it. It's like Batman's been, honestly, gone. The characterization of Batman, the way they portrayed it, has been deserving that for years. It was great.
I'd say I finally read Black Mirror after my Twitter followers ganged up on me and made me go buy it. Because I only got into Scott Snyder with the new Batman stuff. So I went and got that. And that is one of those I had to stop reading and just think, this is why comics are so awesome. The story of James Gordon Jr. is unbelievable.
I just mentioned it a couple seconds ago, but we got a twofer in Justice League International. First, Batman punches Guy Gardner, which you go, yes, this is building since issue one. I didn't think they'd go there. And then you turn the page again and see Black Canary's reaction to missing the punch. I love that. And New 52, I have to say, Blue Beetle's death took me completely by surprise. And I thought, the OMAX series.
Infinite Crisis Countdown to Infinite Crisis.
You know what was one that actually, to me, I thought was an awesome moment? And this was back in, this would have been just after the death of Superman, back when they were doing, I think it was probably in Reign of the Superman. I don't think it was Funeral for a Friend, but back in that era. Because, I mean, I hadn't been reading Superman. I come back for the death, and there's this Lex Luthor, who's the son of Lex Luthor with this long red hair, and apparently a good guy. And then there's this moment where somebody does something wrong to him, this woman does something wrong, and he just kills her. Because he just gets away with it.
And I'm like, okay, this is really the Lex Luthor I knew, and he hasn't turned a corner, and he is evil. And I'm like, and that's awesome. Like, it just caught me off guard. I'm like, that was one of my moments where I go, that was one of those, this is awesome moments. Another good one for me is when Captain America and the Infinity Gauntlet, every single superhero is being wiped out. Thanos has all the ultimate power in the universe, and it's just Captain America left. And Captain America looks at him and just goes, I'm going to give you a chance to surrender now. That's just such a Captain America moment. I was like, that was just one of those, this is awesome moments for me. So it's those little things that I don't see coming where it's like, did you just get the characterization right? Or they just, it gives me those chills and I get the goosebumps. That was one of those moments. I'm like, only Captain America, a man without powers, would look at an absolute god, say that with conviction and believe it. And that's an, this is awesome moment for me.
I will add in Superman number 7 from the new run by Dan Jurgens. And the Jurgens run never really got its footing for a bunch of reasons that we've talked about before. But this, it's like the second and third page of that issue. After my having complained for months and months about it, how I don't like this new version of Superman, I don't like where they're going, hoping that they'll kind of become soon. For that page of Superman standing in front of two innocent bystanders, just saying, stand back, I've got this. That was a great moment for me. I was like, you know, I gave that book a really high review on Comicosity, and it really was about that moment of this. I've waited 6 months to see Superman the way I think of Superman, and at this moment right here, this full page, and just standing in front of danger. So yeah, that was one of those, like, this is why I love the character moments.
This is awesome. This is him.
Yeah, this is.
I got one more, and then let's move on to WeViews, because this is the ultimate gotcha moment for me personally. The killing joke, almost the entire book, but particularly the crippling of Barbara Gordon.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, just having Joker stand over her body and make jokes about a book having a broken spine, and you knew it was permanent, and you're thinking, but Batgirl, we can't do this. I mean that led to 10 years of great stories.
Yeah, or the 10 years
that was a shocker, and that I remember thinking exactly then, this is why I love comic books.
Yeah,
but what are we doing next?
Here I come to save the day.
We're saving you from bad comics.
WeViews, folks. Let's go with Avengers Spider-Man first. Chris, you got to talk about this one.
Yes, Avenging Spider-Man number 12. I'm actually digging this book. I didn't think I would because, and I mean, this is the rub of it. I did not want to collect Avenging Spider-Man because I thought the title, when they announced it originally, was stupid. Avenging Spider-Man. No.
And it is stupid. Avenging Spider-Man, it remains
Spectacular
stupid.
Spider-Man. But I didn't know this was an Avengers team book, basically. Every issue, he teams up with somebody else. And I've been getting it just because it is a fun book that hasn't really tied into too much, and I get my Spider-Man fix without doing too much crossover crap or anything like that. It's just a fun Spider-Man book. This week is no exception, and I'm really looking forward to it because, well, he teams up with Deadpool. But in this book, I got a character. I mean, this could be just my love of the Amazing Spider-Ham, but we have I'm not spoiling anything by telling you the entire book takes place in a dream. We have appearances by a dream character that has ever existed in the Marvel Universe, basically. You have Spider-Man starring in his underwear for the entire book and joking around with Deadpool. This is a throwaway, fun book with actually spectacular in my opinion. Really reminds me a lot of just about every Ramon cover ever done. I just had a great time with this book, and that's why I suggested the other guy read it. And now I get a feeling of the feeling I'm going to get reamed.
Well, I don't know if would you? I don't explain to me what's spectacular about this art, because I'm looking at it right now, and I'm seeing no backgrounds, none. I'm seeing inconsistent character definition.
It's stylized.
But you know what? We've had other stylized books on there where you have complained about this exact thing. It's cartoony. It's not.
But it's a dream, so it works.
It's cartoony without being particularly inventive. I don't get the art. I don't understand the appeal. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm saying it's not special. You know, average to below average, I think. Just concentrating on the art, Keith. Where do you fall?
Okay, the arts. I found there were a lot of words, and a lot of thud jokes.
Oh my God! Yes,
it's over.
Deadpool and Spider-Man. There's going to be a lot of thud jokes. That's their thing, both of them.
So then maybe you shouldn't do the book, and maybe you shouldn't recommend we read it.
You've actually managed to unsell me on Deadpool, is what you've really done.
I'm going to talk about the quality. But I didn't finish reading the book. I got like 12 pages in or 10 pages in. I gave up because, Chris, this is everything I hate about modern comic books. And this is, you haven't gotten this yet. I mean, and this is something where we obviously differentiate on current books. I hate a self-referential, trying too hard to be clever book. This is exactly that. This knows it can be clever and knows it can try and be funny, and it tries too hard. It's not organic. It's not natural. It's not. It's so forced. Keith,
I thought it was okay, but yeah, it was a lot of really bad jokes, not terribly interested to keep going. There was some cleverness to it. I like the Inception gag and it's pretty close to the end. So yeah, the John Hughes reference, I really enjoy. But I always say that there's a big difference between being clever and being funny. And I think that this is clever.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well, what are we going to do, Keith? Well, what else are we going to talk about here?
We got a 30% review there. That's not too bad.
Yeah. Well, it's basically one guy's right, in the middle, one guy liked it, and one guy didn't.
50%. Okay, well, let's talk the big talk. Let's talk Team 7.
Okay.
Who's starting?
You are.
All right. It is very much an origin story. I enjoyed the characters that I was familiar with. I have zero sense of the new characters that have been introduced. I have no idea whether they are from somewhere or whether they've been introduced fresh in this issue. Their names have already escaped me. I like the idea of Dinah Drake. Was that Black Canary's original name?
I guess so, because they say she didn't want to become Black Canary.
Yeah, so Dinah Drake and Mr. Lance are, as the kind of core of the team, I think is a neat idea. I like the grouping of characters that they're using. I like the idea of Slade Wilson and giving him a bit more backstory. I was a fan of what Higgins was doing with Deathstroke, so. I look forward to whoever's doing it after Liefeld, and I'll just pretend that the numbers 8 and 15 go together. So I enjoy it. It's a bit thin as far as the new characters go, but I've been looking for one of these fill-ins and history gaps kind of books. So I'll be trying it for a little while longer anyway. Christopher.
I read both of the tie-in zero issues before I went to Team 7 zero. That would be Deathstroke and Grifter, as well as Suicide Squad. I read all three before. And I actually started digging some of the backstory for these characters before I got into Team 7. And Team 7 the book itself just sort of let me down. It didn't give me a too much new information that the other books hadn't already given me. And I found myself distracted by the lack of characterization from some of the team. Yes, we got to know a little bit more about Deathstroke, a little bit more about Amanda Waller. But really, there are way too many question marks on this team, and I want to know, where the hell is Deathblow? He's a Team 7 member, but he's not pictured anywhere in this book.
And was he announced as a Team 7 member?
I believe he was.
He turned up in passing in the Superman Annual, but he was really out of context in that.
Yeah. And characters such as Fairchild, who in the Image universe went on to procreate and create most of the members of Gen 13. I just found this really uneven. And according to this, Lynch isn't a member. He just is in charge of Team 7. And I'm actually personally against having two female members on Team 7. New 52 has been hard on female characters, but to me, Team 7 should be a Dirty Dozen type book. I'm not saying there should be a dozen members. I'm saying it should be a rough and tumble.
We're getting letters now.
Yes. I'm trying to explain this to the best of my ability. A rough and tumble, the worst of the worst. And having two female members that are goody-goodies, and, I mean, if Amanda Waller or Black Canary were to rebel against the system, I wouldn't have a problem with it. But they both seem to toe the line. They seem to be the school teachers of this group. And thus, I don't think it makes a lot of sense. I want to see Grifter. I want the bad boys to be bad, and if the girls were as bad as the boys, I wouldn't have a problem. But really, I'm feeling the DC characters, other than Deathstroke, which actually fits quite well, are being wedged into Team 7. And I'm not feeling it.
Where do I start? Where do I begin? You know, when you're telling me about the Thunderbolts, I'm thinking to myself, probably don't need to read that because I just read Team 7. this reminds me of one of the reasons this book, and I'm trying to judge the book on its own merits, which is difficult for me because this book reminded me of one of the reasons why I stopped reading DC, and that was because they took one of my top 10 favorite characters of all time and one of my top 2 favorite origin stories, and I don't want to get too much into it because we plan to at some point in time do in our list of shows talk about favorite origins, best origin stories, but it took this character and ruined it. And this reminded me that they did that. So my anger is so high reading it from that it's difficult for me to judge it. But at the end of the day, you talk about Dirty Dozen. I believe this has 10 members, if I remember correctly. In this book is a 10-member team. And how many times do I have to read or see The Seven Samurai or The Magnificent Seven and have it presented the exact same way and that's what this is. This is the Seven Samurai. This is the Magnificent Seven presented in almost the exact same narrative format. So boring. I've been there so many times. This book just feels like something I've read a billion and one times. It's not even that it's bad. It's just that I've read it so many times already. But more than that, I feel like it's not as cool as the Team 7 that it was an Image. I feel like Team 7 and how they tied that in, how they tied in characters from the Spawn universe and the Jim Lee's universe and all these different universes that we knew were together in Image, and they created this really cool team and this backstory to it, what might have been the best thing early Image ever did, both from a story and art perspective, and it was just really cool. And this, as a cool level, just can't match it.
What do we have left for review?
Jennifer Blood. I'll talk about Jennifer Blood. I've never read Garth Ennis. Did Garth Ennis actually create the character and write it, or just create the character?
He created the character, wrote the first 6 issues or something like that.
And I didn't read those. And then I think for the show we got a preview, and I'm not sure if it was the same guy who wrote it. It was a Jennifer Blood miniseries or a regular series, ongoing series, a few months ago. And I hated it so much. So I went in there with this thinking I wasn't going to like it, and I did like this. I like this quite a bit. It's an origin story. It gives a lot of backstory to the character. She's much more likable than she was when I read her before. She's a very likable character here. I understand her. I feel for her. I think the characterization is strong. Some of the first-person narrative is a little forced, but generally good. I think it's an interesting story, and it riveted me. So I turned the pages. I really enjoyed this story. Nothing special in the art, but nothing special in the story, but just well executed and well done. So I like it. Chris, what do you think?
Did we read the same book?
I hope so.
Because this was the most boring thing I think I've ever read. Really, it's like a revenge story, but she doesn't have a whole lot to really revenge. The most interesting thing I can say about the bad guys is one of them wears the ACDC shirt.
It's not, though, a revenge story. It's really more of a protection story. She needs to protect her family. It's more of a protection story than a revenge story, I think. And I think I can understand it being boring to people. It really depends on whether or not you gravitated to and felt for and related to the character, which is what, surprisingly, I did.
No, I mean, I can think of 4 or 5 movies that have exactly the same plot, and each one adds something interesting to the character. And this character really has nothing to go for. Really nothing. I just didn't enjoy it, and art being what it was, I'm surprised this got published. I didn't enjoy it at all.
And Keith?
I knew through the middle.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the pages kept turning, but I wasn't there. I wasn't engaged in the character. It was fine. It was a very... It wasn't just exposition. It was tell, not show. It was all... And then 2 days later, that was when I bought the rifles. Here, you can see me at the rifle store buying the rifle. It's a lot like that. It's just, it's so slow, and the whole retrospective, instead of just leaving it first person and saying 5 years ago and making it present tense, the whole past tense speaking just kind of weighed on me because there's no tension level. So, yeah, I didn't dig it at all.
Well, it is largely a setup for what's going to happen in the rest of the series, right? I mean, that's the thing. It's really a very much a setup issue.
For a series that's already happened, this is just an origin story.
No, I mean, it's still a miniseries. This first story. This is the first part of the origin. So that's what I mean. It's a setup for the rest of the origin as we see her evolution to what she became, which was a character I found very unlikable, interesting enough. So that's all right. We're kind of all over the place in the reviews here this week. That's why we say to you, read them yourselves and feel free and email us. Or feel free and email us your moments where you went, that was awesome. And if it's good enough, we'll read it on the air. Even if it's not good enough, what the hell? We'll throw you a bone? No, it's only if it's good enough. Anyways, Chris, where can they email you?
I'm at Chris at WeTalkPodcast.com, or I'm on the Twitter. I enjoy reading my tweeter, and that's Chris_WeTalk.
And Keith?
You can email me, Keith, at wetalkpodcasts.com. And you can find me on Twitter at CubReporterK. And I just want to let everyone know I am working closely with Comicosity on the most massive project that Comicosity or We Talk Comics has ever taken on. We are doing a DC New 52 History of the DC Universe 3.0 that will be gigantic. I've enlisted four of my followers as well as Aaron from Comicosity helping me go through every comic that has been published by the New 52 with the New 52 banner, which is over 700 comics by the end of September. And we will have a full timeline giving you the past and the future of this universe.
Crazy. Crazy. So, all right. So that's how you can get a hold of them. Our missing host, Brett, B-R-E-T-T, two T's on his name, _ We Talk, or Brett at We Talk Comics, in case you want to talk to him about another show he and I do, maybe fantasy football show or music. He's done some music stuff. We got movies, music, fantasy football, some wrestling. Every day it seems like we have something wrestling related. And all sorts of good stuff here, along with We Talk Comics and our comic book cohorts like Joel Mulvey and Long Box Graveyard doing great stuff. So we have a lot of exciting stuff happening. And if you want to do a blog or you want to do a show or anything like that and you're interested, you can always throw me, Mo at We Talk Podcasts. Throw me an email. I also have a Twitter machine. So I use my Twitter machine when I can. So you can reach me, Mo_WeTalk. And also, you want to check out the Comic Podcast Network, definitely. No question about that. They also got some other good comic book-related stuff there. And, Comicosity is a great site. Keith writes reviews there. So does Brett. So you definitely want to check them out, too. And, buy Scam. Visit Longbox Graveyard's blog. It's awesome. Anything I'm missing, gentlemen?
Did you do the podcast network?
I did it.
Fantastic.
Yes, I think we're OUT.